No, it has not.
So it is subject to any corrections if there...
It can be revised if
there
I determine I need to make a revision.
So it's certainly not a big one, but that's a funny sentence.
One at a time, please. Ross, did you finish? I didn't hear what Ross said today.
Yeah, I was just pointing out that I made a revision today as a result of a comment that Campbell had made. And I believe Campbell just made another comment where we need a separate bullet item. I will be making that revision, which is not really a substantial revision, but it should be done. And we'll create a separate bullet item for two points that were sort of combined together by mistake. So it's a document that can be revised, of course.
Okay. I would just say tally sheets are not signed by chief. I couldn't read it. I couldn't understand it at first. Now, these other things, I remember I was on the audit committee in 2003, and I think most of these I saw then. So I personally don't, I think you could say repeat comment, and that's just fine by me because these same things have been going on for a long time, and I, for one, think that your comments are right on point in terms of there are some organizational issues that we have to look at, and they're beyond the scope of this audit, but I don't really have any other questions about it. Let me back up. I'm sorry, that's all.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks, Ross. The last thing before I go here, the WBAI, the bank signature cards, not a bit is timely. Was that a last year's? Where's my 09? Was that a comment last year, Ross, about the bank signature card? Do you remember?
It was a general comment at the national level, but it applied to various divisions. I've now put it into specific divisions.
Okay. So would you mind putting repeat comment there?
I could put repeat comment there, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Thanks, Ross. Okay, folks.
Bill.
Okay, Bill.
I have a question, too. I'm not sure it fits in the management letter, but sort of a follow-up from last year. We went over the 990 last summer, and there were some changes made, and I don't think any of us ever got an updated one. I don't know if you did or if it was ever filed or if that matters for the audit.
The most updated 990 did not evidently have one change that NIA said should have been made, which was a breakdown of I believe it was of accumulated depreciation by...
There were quite a few changes. I did, when we were at the board meeting in Berkeley, Bill, sent it out. And I gave the... Arlene has it, but, you know, the problem with my hard drive.
Okay.
Lynn Magno should have it because that was emailed to her. Right, Arlene?
Yes.
Yeah, so I will ask Lynn... or if Arlene would be so kind enough to ask, to please send the final one. I want to make sure that Ross, that Ross has the very, very final one.
Well, my other point was it ever filed? I checked GuideStar, and they still had the old version. That was a couple of months ago, though, so.
And
I didn't get a response from Arlene, from LaVarne when I asked her, so I don't know if she had saw that or not.
I thought that it was filed, but I'll check on it.
Okay. And that's true. Bill did raise it, and I guess I will just put it in writing to LaVarne and LCCR. Please put it up there because that's important. That's how people decide whether or not they want to support us. It is very important. Okay. Yeah. Are there any other questions? It's now 9:42, and I'd like to get to the actual audit. So do we have any... other questions on the management comment letter? Okay, very good. So moving right along now. This is pretty long to read here. So, let's see. Ross?
Yes?
Yeah. Could you kindly read the cover sheet? Did you do the honor of reading the cover sheet?
Well, I think... what I would like to do, Nia, is just read the most relevant provisions in the audit report and then answer questions. It's a 26-page document. Hopefully everyone's had a chance to at least look at it before this phone call. The most key provision, of course, on the audit letter, the very front page of the report, has to do with note 19, which states that certain conditions indicate that the company may not be able to continue as a going concern. The accompanying financial statements do not include any adjustments to the financial statements that might be necessary should the company be unable to continue as a going concern. And then I think I will now go ahead and read note 19, which details that. That's on the very last page of the report. The very last page of the footnotes, which is actually page 18 of the audit report. Does everyone have this? Are they referring to it?
Can you verify the title on the or the file name? Is this specific a draft underscore 1102?
Okay, one second, Dutch. I'm looking at a large type hard copy. So if somebody wants to be my eyesight, Bill or Leslie.
Well, the file name is specific a draft underscore 1102.
Dutch, that's the correct document that you're looking at.
Okay.
You.
Ross?
Yes?
I think it is important because, remember, for the purposes of the stream, people don't have this cover sheet. So I think it's important that the cover sheet be read, and then we go to the balance sheet and then the income statement.
Mia, I could read that for you quickly for
okay.
the stream.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, this is a letter dated February 4th, 2011, and it is a draft from the independent auditors addressed to the Board of Directors, Pacifica Foundation, Berkeley, California. We have audited the accompanying statement of financial position of the Pacifica Foundation, a nonprofit organization, at September 30th, 2010, and the related statements of activities, functional expenses, and cash flows for the year then ended. These financial statements are the responsibility of the organization's management. Our responsibility is to express an opinion on these financial statements based on our audit. We conducted the audit in accordance with auditing standards generally accepted in the United States of America. Those standards require that we plan and perform the audit to obtain reasonable assurance about whether the financial statements are free of material misstatement. An audit includes examining on a test basis evidence supporting the amounts and disclosures in the financial statements. An audit also includes assessing the accounting principles used and significant estimates made by management, as well as evaluating the overall financial statement presentation. We believe that our audit provides a reasonable basis of our opinion. In our opinion, the financial statements referred to above present fairly and in all material respects the financial position of the Pacifica Foundation at September 30, 2010, and the changes in its net assets and its cash flows for the year then ended in conformity with accounting principles generally accepted in the United States of America. The statements of financial position, activities, other revenue, and functional expenses by division on pages 19 through 26 are not a required part of the basic financial statements of Pacifica Foundation, but are supplementary schedules presented for purposes of additional analysis. Such information has been subjected to the auditing procedures applied in the audit of the basic financial statements, and in our opinion, is fairly stated in all material respects in relation to the basic financial statements taken as a whole. As discussed in note 19, certain conditions indicate that the company may not be able to continue as a going concern. The accompanying financial statements do not include any adjustments to the financial statements that might be necessary should the company be unable to continue as a going concern. The draft from Ross Wisdom, CPA, PLLC, Certified Public Accountant, New York.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Okay. The first page is the what's known as traditionally as a balance sheet, but for not-for-profit is called Statement of Financial Position. That's correct, right, Ross?
Yeah.
So, okay. Does anybody have any questions on that first page. We're going to try to go through this so that we're not here all night. Does anybody have any questions?
Brief question?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. This is Dutch for Ross. I noticed that our property and equipment assets are $2.8 million roughly, and cash and equivalents are $460,000. When you compare this to other nonprofits, in your experience, is this how does that measure out?
The cash is definitely low. A year ago, the property and equipment was just a moment at 3.1. So it's declined by 200,000, which is mainly through through depreciation and not a lot of equipment acquired. One thing I would like to point out from the balance sheet, to me, the key indicator of financial health for a not-for-profit organization is the ratio between current assets and current liabilities. The total current assets in this report are $1.8 million. The current liabilities on the following page you'll see at $2.5 million, giving a working capital deficit of $738,000. To put this in perspective, 3 years ago on September 30th, 2007, there was a working capital surplus of $2.8 million, and this organization should have a positive working capital, I would say, of around $2 million to be in a normal, healthy financial condition. So it's underwater, so to speak, in that regard by over $2 million.
Excuse me. You said 2.8 million 2 years ago.
At September 30th, 2007, 3 years ago.
Okay. Is that it, Dutch?
Yes. Thank you very much for the bad news.
I know.
Okay.
Thanks, Ross. Does anyone have any questions on that?
Mia? Campbell.
Yes. Go ahead, Campbell.
I guess one thing is a style. Usually I'm familiar with nonprofits having a fund balance and, it's assets minus liabilities equals the fund balance. And you have here on page two, net assets. I'm unfamiliar with that.
That was an accounting terminology change in 2006. There was a FASB or SFAS 2, I think it was 216, which required to break down the equity section into unrestricted, temporarily restricted, and permanently restricted net assets, and to abandon the fund accounting terminology and also the fund accounting policies and procedures that some organizations at that time were using. So it was a significant change in the accounting, generally accepted accounting principles back in 2006.
So that was a gap that wasn't a FASB?
He said FASB.
Well, FASB and SFAS are all gap. Now they're codifying the sections so that we're not having different references. But yes, it was GAAP.
Okay. I also was wondering about this non-current liabilities, deferred rent liability that you have there.
Right.
What is that?
Okay, that's primarily the WBAI Tower, which has accelerated rent commitments into the future. Accounting principles also require, and this was, I think, about 3 years ago, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was about 3 years ago, that you've got to recast leases that accelerate and put them on a straight-line basis. So, for example, if you have a 10-year lease that starts out at 100 and ends up at 200, you've got to total it up over the 10 years, divide by 10, and then evenly amortize it over the 10 years. The difference between that even amortization and the actual cash that you're paying for the lease, which is lower in the earlier years and higher in the later years, goes on the balance sheet as a deferred rent liability. This account will zero out over the term of the lease, but it's alerting the reader to the fact that, in effect, there are rent increases that, if this was an even straight line amortization of the rent, would result in more expense currently. It's a non-cash item, and it appears as non-current because it's also outside the current year.
Okay, and does that just apply to BAI, or is that across the network?
That primarily applies to BAI. There's one other lease that has some increases in it.
You can see that on page 20.
There's a footnote on that. And you can see on page 20 the divisional breakdown. Let me go to that.
Okay.
On page 20, you can see that one.
Okay, Campbell, we have another one. It's running a little late, and I just don't want to tire folks out. We have quite a bit to do here.
Nia, this is Leslie, and I'd like to be on the stack for the liabilities if we've moved down there.
I'm trying to get there.
Okay.
Okay. I guess there's a thing here. The increase on page 6, the increase in accounts payable, $697,000, it seems as though that's pretty huge. Would that suggest having an aging in this in the financial statements at all?
An aging is not normally provided in GAAP financials. Sometimes you see that in governmental accounting, but you can certainly get that from the accounting department. It is not normally a part of the audit report.
Okay. Because that would have been very helpful. Let me just ask one other. On page 11, you've got a building fund for WPFW broken into two parts. One is at $201,000, one's at $2,393. Why is that separated like that?
Campbell?
Yes.
Could everyone just abide by what I said earlier? We're going to go page by page and through the statement.
Okay.
I would like to get to page. I apologize.
Sure. Sure. I misunderstood.
Okay. Sorry. Not a problem. It's fine.
And Campbell, that will be combined on the final report.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Now we're going to. I guess Leslie has a question.
Yeah, I do over on liabilities, Ross. And frankly, it may be for LaVarne to answer this and not you, and I'm sorry she's not on this call. But the audit shows liability of $100,000 on the line of credit. I thought we had paid that down considerably. The last I saw, I thought was a $26,000 amount owed on that, and I was wondering perhaps Arlene knows what's going on with that line of credit. I thought we were in much better shape on that than is shown here.
That is secured by a certificate of deposit. You'll see that just a moment. Let's go. Just a moment. That's back to. Nia, it is necessary to relate sometimes to the supplemental information by division to answer some of these questions, so we're going to skip around a little bit.
Oh, you can do it.
Okay.
You can do it. You're the only one with my permission.
Yeah, I noticed that.
You've been away from the world. You're the auditor.
Ross is special. It's okay.
You'll see on page 20 under the National Vision the line of credit for $100,000, and then on page 19 there is I believe it's secured by is that secured by the certificate of deposit at KPFA?
Yes.
That's the way it was, but let's
that's,
is wrong, it is correct. But I think, Leslie, if I'm hearing you correctly, is why is this here? What are the details? Is it? I thought this thing expired August of last year.
I did too. And the last note on payables I saw.
And I thought we were told that this was paid off. So that's the legitimate cash that left it not there.
And that's why I was hoping Lavarne might be here to respond to that, because I don't think the problem here. Well, I don't know where the problem is, but.
Well, remember, this is as of the date of the year end, which is September 30th.
Yes. And I had a note on payables back in September 27th. I'm not coming up with it right now. It said about $26,000 or $27,000 was owed on that. So I don't know. I just don't know where that stands.
But on page 16 of the 09 audit, it says here, the foundation has a second line of credit agreement with Wells Fargo Bank that expires on August 1st, 2010.
Is Arlene still on the call? Perhaps she's got some information.
I don't know the answer to that one, Leslie. I'll find out. I'm making a note.
Okay.
There's been a lot of questions around that line of credit, and I will admit I'm not totally clear on it, so I will find out before this weekend.
Yes.
Thank you.
On that thing, can I ask a question also? Where is the CD on the assets?
It's under KPFA.
It's under KPFA on page... page 19.
Is it under the current assets on the financial on page 2?
No, it's not. It's under long-term because it's under restricted cash. Cannot be used currently.
Restricted cash. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Leslie,
yes.
do you have any other questions on the liability side?
I have some questions a little bit later on if we're going page by page, but I have one more, but not at the moment.
Yes, I am going page by page.
All right, okay. Then I will bite my tongue.
Okay. Does anybody
have... Yeah, this Bill.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Well, I have a general question. It doesn't relate to one page, but it kind of relates to this indirectly, if I could ask it. Campbell had kind of alluded to this earlier, you know, the time that it takes to get the audit completed. Has that issue been addressed? I remember that was brought up last year, and I was wondering if you're still having trouble getting information from each unit, each station, or why it takes so long.
This is actually the earliest that the audit report has ever been delivered for Pacifica, as far as I know, certainly since the year 2000 or 1999, which is as far back as I can recall. The audit reports normally have been much later. You can speak to last year. It was dated March 19th, but I don't think it was delivered till much later. And normally it's not delivered until a draft at the board meeting in February, and then the final report after that. We got the final trial balance, but there were still some correcting entries. But we got that trial balance on December 22nd, and then there was sort of a natural delay due to that time of year, the holidays and such. Picked up back on it in the middle of January, and then there were some delays with getting documentation from the stations. From KPFA in particular was not as forthcoming as we would have liked with audit documentation. But this audit did go better than most in terms of the timing, and that's mainly due to Lynn Magno at the National Office.
Mia?
Yes? Go ahead, Arlene.
I might just add as a point of information, I'm not sure it's real relevant, But when I was at WM&F, which has stellar financial practices and is pretty timely with everything, they get their audit started before the end of the fiscal year, and they're very lucky if they get it delivered by their January or February board meeting, and their fiscal year ends September 30th. When I was with another nonprofit, that was about a four-month lag from the end of the fiscal year until you actually got the audit. Now, I'm only talking about two, but that's certainly the practice that I have seen.
I think
in that 3 to 5 month range is pretty standard for nonprofits, if I'm not mistaken.
This is where we are, so we just keep
We have smaller non-for-profit organizations that we normally turn around in about 60 to 90 days. That's the normal time frame. But Pacifica does not fit into that time frame. I don't think there's a way you could get Pacifica to fit into that time frame. It's just you've got 7 divisions. You've got a lot of different business managers, a lot of different people involved. It's a very difficult audit. Do not underestimate the nature of this audit.
And one of the things we're working on is, as we get new managers in place, getting both them trained and the necessary training for the business managers working with them. But when you've got interim managers, it's very difficult to be sure to have people that are really up to snuff on your financial practices.
Is it appropriate to move on from the timing of the audit now and move on to the substance of the audit?
I was just about to say, Dutch, it is what it is. So let's keep moving here. Is there a question on page 4? Okay, going once, twice, okay. On page 6, let's get to the expenses. Any questions there?
Hang on, I'm a little behind you here. What happened to page 5?
I'm sorry, page 5. You know my eyes left.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, yes, Ross, on page 5, you have a list of expenses here that pretty well mirrors the expenses from the previous audit, with the exception of settlement fees. That seems to be missing here. Did we not have any settlement fees this year? What, didn't we settle anything? I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, that is the one item on this report that we are in the process of analyzing and revising. We need to break out the settlement. It's under professional fees. You'll see professional fees of $896,976. That includes settlements, which is management in general. And I'm sorry, I don't have that number for you on this phone call, but you will be getting on the final report, actually on a revised draft for the board, we will be breaking that out.
Thank you. That's all I need to know. As long as it's in there somewhere, I'll trust you to break it out when you get the information.
All right.
Will it be broken out by station?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry to hear you have to wait for that, Russ. That would seem like something that should be easily acquirable. Okay, but let's move on to page 6. Any questions on page 6? Ross,
yes.
just to piggyback on Leslie's question about the line of credit, in the details, I think Tony broke out the details. Maybe Leslie has the page handy. I'm doing this from memory now. The details, was there any activity on the line of credit? I think that was in the details last year.
I don't think there was a change under the cash flows.
Don't we need the details on that line of credit? Because it obviously wasn't paid off by August 20th. I guess when you do the investigation, when Arlene completes that,
I don't believe there's a change, Nia. That's why you don't see it on the cash flows. It was 100 at the beginning and 100 at the end, so there's no change.
That's my concern.
The year before it went from 300 to 100.
Right.
So that's
but
why
then
it's
let's
not
see,
a change.
Yeah, but let's look at the payables. There was an outstanding of 26. Was it what you said, like
26,000? Yeah, we got a notice that there was an outstanding payable of $26,000 on that. The numbers don't add up. I'm assuming the audit is right and what we received is wrong, but again, without the CFO here, it's...
Yeah.
At what point in time are you saying it was 26,000?
I believe that notice, for some reason, September 27th, sticks in my head, but I'm looking for it now. And I will continue to look until I can find it, because I had it recently.
I believe we have a confirmation on that. I can't get my hands on it at the moment, but we should have a confirmation on the certificate of deposit at September 30th for $100,000.
And Ross?
Okay.
Yes?
Now, the interest I'm going to... One second here. Leslie pointed that out.
But the question...
On page 4... Well, one second, please. I don't know who that is. On page 4, the supplemental information on last year's cash paid for interest. Shouldn't that be on here also, or am I just missing it? This is on the same page, line of credit. I think there needs to be... Maybe the line of credit information needs to be redone, in my humble opinion.
I'm sorry?
The line of credit that needs to be redone. You need to be given more information on that.
Well, on the cash flow statement, which you're referring to on page 6, what you would see would be changes in the line of credit. If you had, the year before, you had $300,000 of line of credit paid and then $100,000 of new line of credit coming in. And this year, ended September 30, 2010, there was no change in the line of credit. That's why you don't see anything on the cash flow report. There should be a disclosure for interest expense, and that's it should be in the footnotes. Hold on.
But shouldn't you still show the in and out in the cash flow statement?
I don't believe there was any in or out. I think it was just renewed. It did not get paid off. There was no new line of credit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think maybe you need to work with Arlene or LaVarne and figure that out. I don't think that next when we meet on Saturday, by then this should be together, hopefully.
There were no payments or proceeds on the line of credit during the year, so that's why you don't see. The cash flow report reflects changes. For example, in the prior year, $300,000 was listed as a payment on the line of credit, and $100,000 was listed as a receipt of funds from the line of credit. During the current year, there were no changes. There was no payment, and there was no receipt of funds from the line of credit. Therefore, it should not be listed on the cash flow statement.
Yeah. I guess Leslie and Mike and Stewart as directors, or Leslie as a former director, is based on the information in Campbell. Who was the director on here? Forgive me if I'm missing you. Is the information that we got about this $100,000 that's not being reflected in this, which is no fault of yours. I'm not saying that by any stretch, you know. That would be a real stretch. But somehow this doesn't seem correct. But when you, Arlene and LaVarne, talk, I guess I'd like to move on. And Bill,
okay.
I don't know what Bill's recollection is,
okay.
but there's something that needs to be corrected here.
Okay. Can
I remember exactly?
Can I ask a question in regard to this investment income on page 4? And
one second, Campbell. One second. So. Can I get agreement on that, Ross and Arlene? What are you looking for, Nia? I think that that line of credit, based on the information that Levine gave to us as directors, and what's reflected here, where the information is not correct. There need to be more details, and the line ended August 1st. So consider taking all of those things into consideration when the three of you talk about that, as somehow this needs to be corrected. So I just don't want to hold people up anymore because it is getting late.
Mia, this is Jane. Could I ask a question?
It's now 10:13, so I would like to move on.
About what you're asking?
Go ahead, Jane.
Okay, so on page 3 on the statement of financial position, it shows current liabilities of $100,000 under advances under line of credit. Now, are you talking about it anywhere else or just the lack of it on page 6, that there's no mention of that as a change when you thought that there was a change? Is that...
Yes. My specific point is there is no note about it
on
based
page
on information that we got as members of the Pacific National Board. There's some contradiction. Leslie's correct. The payables, it seems to be still outstanding. You know, there is no detail. There is no note. So I don't know what's going on with it.
Yeah, are you saying there should be a footnote to the financials? Or are you saying there should be something on page 6?
There should be a footnote. Let's see what we did last year.
If you're talking about a footnote, then yes, there should be a footnote explaining the line of credit and the interest rate and the term. But now you have skipped forward to the footnotes. I didn't think you were talking about footnotes.
Okay. Now, what I'm saying is on page 4 of the 09, right? I'm sorry to confuse you. It says supplemental information, cash paid for interest.
Okay.
Right?
That is a disclosure on the cash flows. If you look, you do have that information on page, and it will be disclosed in the final report as a separate line item for cash paid for interest. But you have that on page 24 in the supplemental information. The interest is $10,607.
Okay, hold on a second. Page 24. I don't see that well, so it could be maybe I'm missing it. Page 24. Hold on.
I don't see cash paid for interest. I don't see that.
There's no cash paid for interest on page 6. On page 24, there's a line item for interest that shows the interest amount at
$10,607.
Mm-hmm. Is that an accrued number?
The cash paid for interest is an item on the cash flow statement. If you're referring just to the cash paid for interest, that will be on the final report.
Is that bank interest?
It's cash paid for any interest expense as a it's just a separate disclosure item on the cash flow report to let the reader know how much actual cash was paid for interest. It's not a line item on the cash flow statement, but it is a disclosure at the bottom, like a footnote. Yeah.
Okay,
and it's
separate from
bank charges and finance charges.
It's not bank charges, it's just interest.
Interest, okay. I'm happy now, Russ. Aren't you happy you made me happy? So I'd be on the cash flow? Okay.
No, I misunderstood what you were saying there. I thought you were saying there was a mistake on the cash flow report, which I don't think there is. But, yes, there should be a disclosure at the bottom of the page for the cash paid for interest, and we will put that in.
Okay. All right. So let's move right. Campbell, you said you wanted to go back. You never look back, Campbell. Somebody might be gaining on you.
This is looking back and looking forward because there's
okay,
something that's a little bit perplexing to me. On page 4, you have investment income, okay, $35,400. On page, you got me to move my page. I think it's page 12.
Right.
There's a notation there of that $35,000, but then above that, there's an indication of $18,000
total investment looks like a loss, unrealized gains and losses.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't see where this comports.
Yeah, that's not a mistake. It's confusing, I grant you. The schedule of investments shows all investments at cost, fair market value, unrealized gains, losses for the entire period that those investments were held. That's one disclosure of the investments total unrealized gain and losses. The income for the current period consists of realized, in this case, realized and unrealized gains that occurred during the current period. So it would be the value of the investment at the beginning of the year versus the value of the investment at the end of the year. So those two numbers are represent two different things. The 18,108 loss means that if all the investments had been sold, that would be the loss per
its cost. It's a paper loss.
Well, unrealized is a paper loss, yes, but
yeah.
That's not what I'm saying. The investment income for the current year is the unrealized gain or loss just for the current period, starting with fair market value at the beginning of the period and ending with fair market value at the end of the period. The schedule that you're referring to, and I understand why you would be confused, it's really referring to sort of a tax basis where, you know, when you have a gain or loss on your tax return because you sold something at a gain or sold something at a loss, it's alerting the reader to what the total gain or loss would be from inception, whenever that asset was bought, if it goes back prior to the current period. And it's based on a cost basis versus fair market value basis, whereas the income figure is for the current period, which is on the report, is strictly on an accrual basis, mark to market, what was the value of the asset at the beginning of the year versus what was the value of the asset if unsold at the end of the year, and that would be the current period unrealized gain or loss.
So the 2010, the 2010 doesn't relate to that whole chart. It should just be on fair market value for 2010, right?
The investment gain, net investment income is based on 2010 fair market value to fair market value, whereas the previous schedule up above starts with cost, which could have been in any prior year, whenever that asset was acquired, not just the current year.
Somehow that isn't very clear, and I hope that maybe you can have a notation that would, you know, help make that clear.
I can try to explain it, but this is the conventional presentation for this schedule of investments that's typically provided. I will be glad to put some sort of explanatory statement to it. I acknowledge that on the same page, we've got one number that says it looks like an 18,108 loss and another number that says 29,002 gain, and it could easily prompt the question from somebody who's not familiar with these schedules, which almost no one would be. So I'll try to explain.
Yeah. Another thing I'm puzzling over, and maybe this isn't a proper question for you, but I don't understand what in the world we're doing, you know, after 2008, what we're doing with any money in mutual funds or equities. I don't understand that.
That's in the endowment account that's been held for many years.
The endowment account, which one is that?
But I don't think this is Ross's prerogative to do that.
Well, but these things are, you know, things that are happening with the endowment, and we already have a situation, I can't recall exactly where it is, where we're over the limit with FDIC by $61,000.
Okay, let's.
A different place, yeah. But
Campbell, I love you a lot. I don't mean to cut you off, but that's not for us. That's not for us. You and I know that. That's not for us. I like to even know.
So it's endowment that's in there.
Yes, that's the Charles Schwab account.
Can you indicate when these things were acquired so that, you know, I mean,
that would be, you would have to provide an extensively detailed schedule of every item in there, which we're not going to. It's just, I don't know.
Okay.
I will put some sort of an explanatory statement. to explain the difference between the two. I think I'll move the investment income over to the page that has to do with investment income and just leave this as a schedule of investments in the account, in the endowment account.
Okay, Cambador.
Okay.
Two hours late. It's 10:23, our time. In terms of the notes, I would like to go to page 11.
Okay.
Well, page 11, that's just cosmetic, having the double line on the total. That's minor. In terms of the... The investments, Ross?
Yes.
Yeah, if I'd like to just put myself on the stick, if I may, please. In last year's, on page 15, there were three levels, right?
And yes, category 1, 2, and 3. It's
yeah,
not,
but you don't
it's not material this year.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Ross.
It's not a material item this year. It's if you go back to last year's report, you'll see the breakdown.
So you only do it when it's a material?
Yes, and it only relates to financial instruments. Last year they had the certificate of deposits as level 2, the equities, mutual funds, and U.S. Treasuries as level 1.
Level 1 we had. I can't really tell. Well, to be honest with you, I didn't know that. So,
we are disclosing in a footnote.
Where are we now?
We're on page 12 on the investments.
Oh.
I was looking for the levels broken out like they did last year, but Ross is saying. Last year it was material, this year it isn't. And I honestly did not know that. That's the only time it gets broken out. So, lesson learned. I kind of like it, though.
it's a lot of verbiage to explain level 1, 2, and 3. And if it's not material, I just didn't think it was worthwhile putting it in the report. But we can put it back if you like it.
Yeah, I think because not everybody has the same level, no pun intended, of understanding of these financials. You know what I mean? Let me put back here. All righty. So now, does anybody have any questions on page, any other questions on page 12? Or any questions? Okay, hearing none, let's go to page 13. And Lisa, before Lisa left, someone please help me here. I think I will speak for Lisa. I will try my best. And Lisa's concern was the WBAI, the building fund, not understanding where that money went or what that was spent on. It seems a little, it concerns me that could not be disclosed to you as the auditor. That should be really easy, in my opinion, to tell you why that was used. What was it used for?
These were funds which were listed as temporarily restricted funds in the previous year and had been released into the general funds during the year to be used, obviously, for operations. I mean, I don't know specifically how they were used, but they were released into the general funds.
Okay. I'm confused. I didn't hear that. Here it says building fund. We don't have a building. So you're saying, what now, Rod? Maybe you can speak up a little bit. It's kind of hard for me to hear, unless somebody has heard it and understood it, but I didn't get it. Sorry.
That building fund is just WPFW, right?
No, that's WBAI.
$65,000. I'm asking Lisa's question for the 65.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand that.
Well, for a specific answer, I would have to look into it and get back to you. It was listed under temporarily restricted funds in the preceding year, and it was released during the current year. And I would have to research that specifically. Yeah, I can't give you that answer on this phone call.
Yeah, I'm looking for it where it says I'm just looking for it. Temporarily restricted. Yeah, I see it there.
Yes, Bill.
Yes, go ahead, Bill.
Well, is the question, why were they released? Why were they not restricted anymore? Is that what you're wondering?
Yes, yes.
Because it seemed to me we don't have a building. And why? I thought there was more money in there than $65,000. But of course...
Well, the restriction might have had conditions where it could be unrestricted, but I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Yes. Campbell, I've got a question on this also. Was it a donor restriction or was this a national office restriction?
This was a donor restriction.
CTB.
So the restriction should still exist, don't you think? I guess I'm like Lisa. I can't speak for Lisa, but I think I know where Lisa is going with it. Because Lisa was on the local station board then. Well, if Russ doesn't know, Ross doesn't know. So I can't get any more information from him. And the CFO is not on the phone. Arlene, you don't know, do you?
I don't know the answer, but I've made a point to find out.
Okay. So I'd like to move on because that will be taken care of. Okay, is that okay, Ron?
And I'm also looking into it, Nia. So I think we may have something in our file, but I will find out and get back to you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on that? I think the WPFW, Jane had a question on that? That's from...
No, I just didn't know where you were, sorry.
Oh, sorry, okay. Did I see anything else on here that looks out of the ordinary?
Can I ask a question? This is Bill.
Oh, sure. Go ahead, Bill.
I know there were some concerns expressed earlier last year about to make sure all the CDP grants funds were spent correctly. I assume that was, you checked into that?
There's a
In other words, they're partially restricted for syndicated programming. I'm not sure what percentage has to be spent on that, but I assume that was done.
I think it's about 26%. Well, it's not done directly. You know, the when the national office receives the funds, they are offsetting it through the central services and the interdivisional accounts.
Right.
But the national office is already laid out for payroll at the stations. So if the station owes the national office for payroll and the national office has received the CPP funding, then it will keep it and clear it out against the interdivisional accounts.
Okay.
So, you know, money is fungible, but it's there was that amount of money in the station's budget being used accordingly. I've never discovered any compliance issues with the CPP funding.
Okay, I didn't think so. I just want to make sure I could tell people that.
No, we have not had an issue with that, no.
Thank you.
Ross?
Yes.
I think my BAI question would apply to WPFWs also. Looking at 09, that went from 62 down to 31, and I know they're not. They too have not moved. So this building fund. Arlene, do you know what happened?
I can't hear you, Nia. You're breaking up.
Sorry. The WPFW, a similar question to WBAI in terms of their building fund. It went from 62,000, I'm just rounding it off now, to 31,000.
Actually, it did not. Let me clear this up, Nia. You're looking at page 16 on the prior year report showing the 62,622.
Yeah.
Is that where you are?
Yeah.
Okay. That was the amount in temporarily restricted funds for the building fund for WPFW. There was also $168,689 in accounts payable for the, in effect, for the building fund. Yes. We considered that an error, and we corrected it in this report. So we reclassed the $168,689 to temporarily restricted funds, and we also kept half of the $62,622 in temporarily restricted funds. That combination results in the $200,000, which you see on page 13 under WPFW for the building fund.
Okay, yes.
That's from the one donor. The so-called match for 31,311 was determined by management not to be a match, and that was released. And that's where you see 31,311 that had previously been in building funds being released.
Okay.
There was a pretty screwy situation in the way those deposits had been made, and the WPFW funds had been deposited into a WBAI bank account prior to LaVarden's tenure, before her coming on board, even as interim. And that's all been corrected now.
Okay. Forgive my eyes. I have no top peripheral vision there. And I forgot about it. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Page 14.
I participated in that change, and we moved that money into Washington. It's in D.C. now.
Okie dokie. Great. Good job. On page 14, does anybody have anything on page 14? Okay, hearing nothing. Going to page 15. Anything there?
Well, I have something on 14 question.
Okay, that is him.
Where do we show the borrowings from the Heath Trust?
Ross, that's
there, Ron. There is the 375. You've got two items in the Heath Trust under permanently restricted net assets, 375 at KPFA, 375
right.
at National Office.
Right.
The 375 at National Office is a bequest receivable that has not been collected by the National Office, but could be collected under certain exigent circumstances, and is being, and National feels that that those circumstances exist, and it appears as a receivable, as a bequest receivable on page 2 of the balance sheet. It's included in the 382,670. If you go to the divisional statement, you'll see it broken out under National there. The other 375 at KPFA, let's see, let's go to the KPFA balance sheet.
That is in an account at the San Francisco Foundation.
Are you looking for something, Ross?
If you go to page 19, you'll see the 375 under KPFA. That is that's listed as a receivable because it's being held at the San Francisco Foundation.
Why is it being held there? I thought it was part of.
They would reissue that check.
I beg your pardon?
That's the only way that the Heath Foundation Trust Fund would reissue that check. You know, it has in a file folder at KPFA.
Yeah, I know about that. But
Have they reissued the check or not?
Yes, they have. And it is in the San Francisco Foundation, and that's where that significant amount of interest earned at KPFA,
yeah.
Where that came from.
Yeah.
But,
why would it be in another foundation? I mean, does the foundation have FDIC insurance or something?
That's what they required as part of our getting the check back. It is a foundation that does investments for other nonprofits.
Oh.
And helps them invest their money, quote-unquote, wisely. And the only way that the Heath Foundation would reissue that check was if we agreed to place it in the San Francisco Foundation.
Arlene is 100% correct. We talked a lot about that on the Pacifica National Board, and that is absolutely correct. So that is their prerogative to say where they want us to keep it, since we got the money back.
And that was one of the things, I mean, we lost some control over that money by it having been undeposited for 16 months or whatever.
I remember we went over all that at one of the PMB meetings last year. I think maybe the LA meeting.
Yeah. We don't have to roll over that again.
Another point is that we have earned significant interest on that account. While it's been in their investment, so that's the good thing.